Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Today's show is about weighing some often very wild claims against the evidence. How do we separate fact from fiction? How do we tell the difference? How do we protect ourselves from some kind of crazy ideas out there? Well, Dr. Stephen Novella is a neurologist and a professor at the Yale School of Medicine. I've had him on this broadcast. He's also one of the many award-winning professors at the Great Courses Plus, and he's got a series called Medical Myths, Lies and Half-Truths, What We Think We Know May Be Hurting Us. And Dr. Novella gets into a bunch of stuff, the medical misinformation out there. Myths about everything from diets to sugar to acupuncture to vaccines to hypnosis to so much more. This series at the Great Courses Plus streams right into your life, into your computer, your smartphone, your laptop, your tablet. It's one of over 8,000 different lectures on a variety of subjects, from medicine to physics to the brain to the arts. Personal finance to travel. There's even a course on wine tasting. The Great Courses Plus is a life-enhancing resource that helps to make every single day an education. So check out Dr. Stephen Novella's Medical Myth series and so much more at The Great Courses Plus today. My listeners get their first full month free. Just sign up with my special URL. Use thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. To get your free month, sign up today at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. Next Tuesday is my conversation with Lucian Greaves. Going to be an interesting radio show as I talk to the co-founder of the Satanic Temple about all this activism that's going on. I'm trying to get these satanic monuments on display next to Christian monuments on taxpayer-funded property. They have made international headlines by doing so, and I'm going to talk to Lucian Greaves himself about what's going on, what the purpose is, are they truly satanic, and all that stuff. And then we're going to go from the dark side to, supposedly, to the light side as we talk about Jesus. Early April, I've got David Fitzgerald. He's got a new book coming out called Jesus Mything in Action, which I would call the Jesus killer. I mean, it's just another nail in Jesus's coffin for the idea that there was a Jesus who walked planet Earth and who is supposedly, literally, historically, scientifically proven. This book is releasing. David Fitzgerald is the author. We're going to talk about Jesus Mything in Action. That's coming up here on the first Tuesday in April, so you don't want to miss that. You know, in relation to the show we did last Tuesday on the Church of Scientology, this is just an interesting social experiment. You might try it sometime in your own life. If you know a devout Christian, a Bible-believing, Jesus-loving, Sunday-go-to-meeting Christian, okay, and you go up and you say, hey, do you believe in the teachings of Scientology? Do you believe that the great galactic dictator and evil overlord Xenu chased billions of humans here to planet Earth and then had them destroyed by exploding hydrogen bombs inside volcanoes? But their spirits remained here on Earth and then took up residence inside these clumsy human shells, these shells which have brought us so much worldliness and depression and pain and distress and unhappiness. And only by aligning ourselves with the Church of Scientology and its teachings can we peel back, can we slough off these clumsy human layers that drag us backward and get once again in touch with the gods we truly are. Being able to have godlike powers, psychic powers, the powers of telekinesis, to be able to move objects with our minds, to be able to read minds, we would be gods in so many ways. And one day we will find ourselves living in a happy, happy forever place as gods on a planet of our own somewhere out there in the cosmos. Do you believe that story? And the Christian says, course I don't believe that. It's so obviously man-made. It's so obviously about controlling people. It's so obviously a money grab. Who would ever buy such nonsense? Okay, then, do you believe in the great Lord Yahweh, a being that existed inside a big nothing until Yahweh decided to create something? Among the somethings that Yahweh created was Lucifer. Lucifer created perfectly, without flaws, without blemishes, but for some reason then began to act imperfectly and became Yahweh's arch enemy. And Lucifer was cast out and given access to planet Earth, a round planet which also, according to the Bible, had corners. And this planet became home to Yahweh's created children, a dirt man and a rib woman who lived in an enchanted garden filled with talking animals. But Lucifer charged a talking serpent to come and deceive the two children. And in an act of disobedience revolving around a single piece of fruit, generations of humankind were thrust into moral chaos. And ultimately, Lord Yahweh realized that the best way to solve this problem, a problem that for some reason in his omniscience he did not see coming, the best way to solve the problem would be to impregnate an unwed teenager with himself, his own divine seed, so that he might be born in human form and several decades later have himself spiked to a few pieces of wood. And if we'll just believe in the God-man who had himself spiked to two pieces of wood, we too can slough off this clumsy mortal shell, this physical outer layer, and get in touch with our inner spirits, our spiritual beings, that using the conduit of Lord Yahweh's vast supernatural energy, we too could make alterations in our physical world. Our chants and mantras could actually change the reality that we live in. They could heal wounds. They could alter the weather. They could move mountains. They could find us the best parking spaces. And one day, all who believe in Lord Yahweh will all find themselves living in a happy place out in the cosmos somewhere, a place constructed just for us, where each of us gets a beautiful big mansion, surrounded by pearly gates, accessed by streets of gold, surrounded with a cacophony of angel song. We will be reunited with those that we knew and loved in our earthly lives, and we'll all live a godlike eternal existence, happily ever after. Do you believe that story? And the Christian looks at you and says, "Oh, stop, you make it sound so ridiculous. I mean, I see what you're doing. Your use of language is designed to make all of this just sound ludicrous." And of course, you stop and you say, "Look, I'm not making it sound ludicrous. It happens to be ludicrous. So all the Bible's absolutely true. It absolutely makes perfect moral and scientific sense." Dr. John Loftus calls this the outsider test for faith, where people are always looking with a critical eye toward other religious beliefs while casting absolute deference upon their own. And they'll look at other holy books and say, "Well, who wrote it? When was it written? And how was it verified? And have its claims ever been tested and retested? We must know." But you bring up their own holy book and you see a switch literally flick. You can see their eyes glaze over. You see the mannequin stare. You see critical thinking shut down and absolute deference begins. "Well, of course, my faith is different." Anyway, I just thought of that after the show we did last Tuesday. Just an interesting experiment. Try it sometime. This ties in to kind of what we're talking about tonight. The more nonsensical it sounds, the crazier it sounds, the more it's absolutely true. It's obviously supernatural agents that are causing specific things to happen in our everyday lives. Can't you see it? And of course, you and I are looking and only seeing cause and effect, action, reaction, the natural world, the laws of physics in play, or maybe even blind luck. What are you talking about? And the more nonsensical they sound when they talk about this stuff, the prouder they are of themselves. I'm doing a speech around the country. I gave it in Los Angeles in January, just gave it in Wichita, Kansas a few weeks ago, and I'm taking it to New Orleans in May. Actually, I'm doing several cities in May. New Orleans, Jackson, Mississippi, Memphis, Tennessee, Springfield, Missouri, looks like Fort Smith, Arkansas. In June, I'm going to take it up to Toronto for Imagine No Religion 7. And the whole speech is kind of a rant. Just a venting of frustration. It's called My Biggest Beef with Christianity for the Moment. And it talks about, and in many ways I'm indicting my own self because I was this person. On the order of decades, I used to do this. The more ridiculous and insane we sounded, the more they patted us on the head and congratulated us for our godliness. I'm watching a television show. Somebody recommended it to me. It's called Hunted. And it's a quote-unquote reality show, and we all know how reality shows work, right? How much of it is really reality. But we figured we'd give it a shot. It's entertaining. The gist of the show is they take some everyday people, just everyday people, and they give them an hour to gather what they can and get a plan and go on the run. And they have 28 days to try to evade these trained investigators. They get former FBI and former Homeland Security and professional trackers and people who are experts in cyber technology and how to trace people. And, you know, it's an interesting premise. So you got these people who are on the lam and they're trying to camp out in tents or they're staying with friends or sleeping in the trunks of cars or whatever. Because if they can evade these investigators for 28 days, they win $250,000. It's a pretty hefty cash prize. So one of the contestants, and I'm not giving anything away, one of the contestants is a husband and wife who own an airsoft gun store somewhere. And they are some Jesus-loving people. Jesus, 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 God, and Jesus, okay? Got a big sign on their driveway that says something like, thank you, Jesus, for this day, or praise Jesus. That's how hardcore they are. So they interview them as they're on the run from law enforcement or these investigators, whoever they are. And the guy's like, with a straight face, he's like, we're just praying to the good Lord that he's going to help us evade these people for 28 days so that we can win the money. And of course, there's a culture of people that are like, that's just so beautiful to see him defer away from himself and give his trust in the Lord. And the big things and the small, sure, it's just a television show, but the Lord, to him, there's nothing that's small. And, you know, they could sure use the money. So he's deferring from himself and relying on Jesus to help him win the $250,000. I'm watching the show. Natalie's watching my face because she knows I'm just about to come off the couch. What the hell are you people talking about? Let's just say that there was proof of Jesus and Jesus had godlike power and he's out there. Let's just say there's a Jesus. Let's start there, okay? I would never worship a God who in this world of unimaginable suffering would direct his divine power to help this guy win a game show. Morally, I couldn't align with that deity. With just the white noise of pain and distress and darkness and agony on this earth, the Jesus that would help this guy win on a television show is not a Jesus I want in my life. Hey, you know what, Jesus? You need to get your ass over to a children's hospital. That's where you need to be, okay? That's where you're most required. Hey, there's 20, 25,000 people who are going to starve to death on planet Earth today. They could sure use a tap on the shoulder. While you're busy making rainbows and finding car keys and creating good weather because somebody has an outdoor wedding reception somewhere. While you're busy getting credit for the invasive surgery that someone else's insurance company paid hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to fund. You know, maybe you should do something useful. You know, the global cure for cancer? The cure for cancer that you and your omniscience already know? It's time to write that shit down and give it to somebody who can use it, right? Forget the guy on the game show and let's do something useful with all that power. We talk on this broadcast today about miracles, the people who were claiming God's supernatural intervention for what? How do you frame a miracle? What's your criteria for miracles? How do you differentiate between human intervention and supernatural intervention whenever you're thanking God for a successful surgery? How's this done? This broadcast is going to be a cathartic moment for those of us who have found ourselves frustrated by the claims of miracles and supernatural activity in an obviously natural world. I just don't have any patience for it recently. You ever feel that way? I unfriended somebody on Facebook just a while back. Not a close friend, an associate. She was posting something about the supernatural. God speak and a little bit of Book of Revelation and tons of America. in there. And you know what the clip was that she posted to prove her point? She posted a clip from Alex Jones. I couldn't take it. I couldn't watch anymore. I couldn't be in the proximity of the dumpster fire that was her Facebook page any longer. Nice lady, precious lady. I'm sure she loves her family and wants to do good in the world. I can't take it. I must unfriend you. There's a portion of me that's secretly terrified if I spend too much time in your proximity, I might become infected. I mean, of all the sources, of all the information in all of the planet, you picked Alex Jones? Alex Jones is like the Tasmanian devil, the frothing Tasmanian devil of wild, hard right, religious right conspiracy. He is what would happen if you were to have the unholy marriage of Joshua Feuerstein and late night radio talk show host Art Bell. Like, if they had a love child, it would be Alex Jones. God. I mean, it's insane, and it's become so difficult to watch. People talking and acting in nonsensical and often crazy ways, and they're convinced they sound perfectly reasonable. I feel like I'm a compassionate guy when it comes to religious people, because I used to be one. I'm a compassionate guy. I understand. Inherited belief, I understand the power of childhood indoctrination and brainwashing and cultural reinforcement and all those things. I get it. I understand it. I just know they're victims. They're victims. So many of them are victims. There comes a point when you just can't watch it anymore. CBN posted an article. I saw this thanks to the Freedom From Religion Foundation's tweet on the story. It's an article posted on CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network. The title of the article says, "The Miracle One Couple Received After 953 Days in Prayer." And it was the story of a couple in Texas, Lauren and Garrett. They're both in their upper 20s, and they had been praying for and working toward trying to get pregnant, have a baby. This was their dream. And they had been diagnosed, is that how you say it? Diagnosed with infertility, right? They were infertile. So they were trying in vitro and all these other things. They were trying to overcome this diagnosis and somehow get pregnant. And so there's a Facebook post by Lauren, and it starts out like this. It says, "We prayed for 953 days, 452 needles, thousands of tears, one corrective surgery, four, I don't even know how to say these words, Clomid letrozole attempts, two IVF in vitro fertilization rounds, three failed transfers, and one amazing God." And there's the announcement that they are now expecting boy-girl twins. And the photograph posted has these little onesies for babies. It says, "Worth the wait and wait and wait and wait." And they surrounded the onesies with hundreds of syringes, which represent the hundreds of syringes they had used over the course of over 900 days. Now, under this announcement is a 1,400-word post about how wonderful God is. Well, look, I'm not trying to rain on the parade here. These people, I'm hugely happy for them. Hey, what an amazing thing. You know, what a tragedy if they had not been able to have the family that they wanted. My heart would have broken for them, and I'm genuinely happy that this young couple is going to have twins. I'm part of a boy-girl twin thing myself. I got a twin sister. I know what they're talking about, and I'm so happy for them. But in a 1,400-plus words written, God, God, thank God, 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 praise God, Jesus, God, whatever. You know how many of these words are dedicated to the people who actually participated in and facilitated the treatments which created the pregnancy? Zero. None. Not one mention of the health professionals, the people who were working with this couple shoulder to shoulder, hand to hand, heart to heart to try to make this quote-unquote miracle happen. Not one. You want to thank God? Knock yourself out. Go ahead. To God be the glory. Fantastic. Please do not commit the sin of ignoring the people who stood beside you to make this happen for over 950 days. And to those who protest and say, oh, it doesn't harm anybody, let them thank whoever they want to thank. It's no skin off your teeth. Well, My point is that it withdraws acknowledgement from people who do so much and sacrifice so much and invest so much. There is a cost to ignoring the people who are the true agents of intervention. Why are you thanking magic when the person next to you is the one who made it happen? Or is it just a pattern seeker? You look around and you see something that resembles something and it's got to be Jesus. Oh, look, there's a cloud formation of Jesus's face. Look, there's sun rays coming down through it. We're going to talk about some of the more extreme versions of those miracles. The Virgin Mary toast, you know, the weeping statues. We're going to get into the basics, the stuff you might expect. And then some other stories of quote unquote miracles that fall well short of the criteria of being supernatural. I'm doing an example on the road here. Again, this is part of the speech I've been giving. It has to do with an event that happens in June of every year in the United States. It's called See You at the Pole. Now, as a Christian, we used to do this. The first Thursday every June, there's an event where Christians, students in their schools, and adults to go to their courthouses. You go find the flagpole where the American flag is flying, and you bow at the flagpole and you pray for the United States. And students are encouraged to do it before school starts. You show up early and everybody gathers around, and churches will organize these. You'll often see dozens, perhaps hundreds of people coming together, and they all join hands. And sometimes there's a podium and a speaker, and you pray for the USA. See you at the pole. And then adults go to the courthouses. Well, there's this video from, I think, a couple of years ago. Conservative Christian talk show host Laura Ingraham posted it on her website, and it was viral on Facebook about this quote-unquote miracle involving the Christian flag. And it's a See You at the Pole event. And so there's, I forget what state it is off the top of my head. I should have pulled the video up, but it's the American flag, a state flag, and the Christian flag. All three are flying right next to each other in the breeze, and they're all waving majestically as a prayer is taking place. And so everybody bows their head, and they start praying. During the prayer, the two flags that are not the Christian flag, the American flag and the state flag, went limp. Yet the Christian flag continued to wave in what seems to be a supernaturally generated breeze. Why would the other flags go still? But the Christian flag continued to fly high and wave proudly. This must be the divine breath of God. And that was the angle they took when they shared this video online. The Holy Spirit is often referred to as a divine wind. But no one stopped to ask about the materials that the flags were made of, right? The Christian flag being more lightweight, lighter material. No one stops to look at the physics of it. They just saw a flag waving that happened to be a flag that represented their particular pet religion, and they cried miracle. Is this the standard for miracles in the United States? Is this what we're looking for? Somebody on Reddit was talking about how, yeah, thousands of years ago, Jesus made the lame to walk and the blind to see and the deaf to hear, and he raised people from the dead. Today, Jesus dedicates his divine powers to creating a slight breeze. It just makes you crazy. I don't know if you heard, but there's a brand new film which just released. It's based on Lee Strobel's book of the same title, The Case for Christ. I love it when Christians produce films proving Christianity. Who's the target audience? Hey, let's produce cheaply made Christian media marketed to a largely Bible-ignorant, happy-clappy, cultural Christian audience desperate to be validated in a world that so inconveniently challenges them. We can drag out some really flimsy, sad, pathetic evidence, make it look really flashy. They'll just lab it up. After all, the audience is not exactly a culture that embraces science and or fact-checking. And they'll promote it in their churches and Christian homes and drag their homeschool children to it and make us a shit ton of money while at the same time being patted on the head and validated in a cocoon of belief reinforcement. Let's do that. Oh, look, here comes Lee Strobel. He has an offering of his own. Wonderful. The Case for Christ, the movie trailer, shows in the trailer itself images of the Shroud of Turin. How is it that we are still talking about the Shroud of Turin as quote-unquote evidence as a miracle in the 21st century. I do not understand. I do not understand. If you don't know what the Shroud of Turin is, it is supposedly the burial cloth of Jesus. It's a piece of cloth about 14 feet long and just under 4 feet wide, and it bears the imprints of what looks like Jesus. And believers are like, well, what further proof do you need? And our response is, a lot more proof. Supposedly, this image on the cloth is somehow a perfect photographic negative of Jesus Christ as buried after the crucifixion, dated 2,000 years ago. Coincidence? I think not. Of course, we've studied the cloth, an elaborate forgery, which almost certainly dates back to the medieval era. And the stuff that's supposed to be blood and organic material or whatever turns out to be paint. At this pigmentation on the cloth, supposedly blood. No, it's red ochre paint. And they were able to replicate the Shroud of Turin by using ovens. So it's not 2,000 years old. It's more like 650. It's not blood. It's paint. It's obviously a fake or forgery, even if it was dated back to 2,000 years ago. And even if it somehow was blood and organic material, how would that be proof of a Jesus? Did Jesus sign his own name on the shroud? I think not. It is a human image. It is a no one. And why in the world would Jesus, if he genuinely cared about every man, woman, and child on planet Earth, sit back and say and do nothing while people were looking at the weaves of cloth, wondering if this was the type of cloth that wealthy Jews might use? It sure looks like it. Wouldn't a benevolent Jesus just show up, tap you on the shoulder, and say, hey, look, it was me? Instead, he's got people with microscopes going, is it paint or is it blood? He's got a beard. Long hair and a beard. He's about 6 feet tall. Definitely male. Definitely male. I mean, is God's master plan this type of weird Rubik's Cube? And people argue like this. Well, it has to be a mystery. That way, the discovery of Jesus means we really wanted to find him. Like, if he was too obvious, if he made himself too perfectly clear, if he was too understandable to insects like us, he wouldn't be truly godlike. He has to be weird and confusing and pull this crazy shit to prove that he's God. I mean, it's this type of culture which prompts the success of books from people like apologist James Dobson. He writes a book called When God Doesn't Make Sense. The more nonsensical he is, the more we know he is God. Shut the hell up. Just stop talking. If for some reason I'd been friends with Dr. James Dobson, I would have to unfriend him. Sorry, you're out. You're taking up oxygen, pal. You're taking up valuable time. You are diminishing the collective IQ of the species, and I can't watch it anymore. I can't watch it. I can't take it. It's a story that came out last year about a church in South Africa, the Enlightened Christian Gathering Church, the ECG, with Shepherd Bashiri. He's the pastor. And there was a South African woman. Her name is Margaret Tlatshwayo. I hope I'm saying her name right. Margaret was hired by the church. 38-year-old woman. She was hired by the church. They said, look, we'll pay you this. And she was part of a team of people who were, quote unquote, hired, according to the woman's claim. They were hired to act like they were being healed by the church's pastor. She said, quote, I was told I must act in a holy way and pretend I was healed. I had to testify to living a horrible life before. I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I couldn't resist the money promised. I needed the money to feed my three children. I couldn't turn down the offer, so I did what they told me. And I guess she did this for months. After a while, apparently, the church ran out of money to pay these actors because there were so many people coming forward, being paid to say that they were healed. They got disgruntled. Some of them said their conscience got the better of them. They just couldn't do it anymore. So they came forward and said, the church paid me to fake my own healing. Now, do you think this is genuinely going to matter to a huge percentage of the members of the Enlightened Christian Gathering Church in South Africa? You think the people who are wailing and crying and swaying and thanking Jesus for his divine power, you think they're going to believe that these were paid actors? No, this is going to be an attack of Satan. A conspiracy by heathens to undo the good work done by this beautiful man of God. James Randi used to call these people the unsinkable rubber ducks. And that's a great analogy, right? Unsinkable. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how long you immerse them in the waters of the evidence, facts, and reason. They will pop to the surface and completely dry off and not remember a thing about it. Doesn't make any difference to me. He's a good man performing miracles. You and I are in the wrong business. South Africa has long been known for its share of faith healer fakes and frauds. I mean, we got a ton of them here in the United States, and you'll see them all around the world. South Africa, no exception. I'm going to get these names wrong, I'm sure. But Pastor Zendile Andries November, he's the pastor of Victorious Faith Ministries. Woman comes to his church, and she says that she has a problem with her private parts. Her vagina has boils or sores of some kind. It makes urination very difficult. Intimacy is impossible. Please pray for me. I need a healing miracle. Now, Pastor November of Victorious Faith Ministries inserts in her crotch his holy shoe. Right? He says he believes God can use anything, any earthly object, so he puts his foot in her crotch. And the placement of his holy shoe apparently, allegedly, renders a miracle and heals her vagina. She says now she has no problem whatsoever with it. It's a miracle. The strategic and proper placement of the holy shoe of God's divine messenger on planet Earth has healed her vagina. Check this out. Breath of Christ Ministries, also in South Africa. Prophet Theo Maseko. He's got an interesting cure for disease. Diseases like HIV. People come to his church and they say, I'm sick. I need help. You know what he has them do? And you know what they actually do by his request? They drink Havilland engine cleaning fluid. You cannot make this stuff up. They drink Havilland to cure HIV. It's also apparently good for the casting out of demons. And the pastor says, because people drink Havilland engine cleaning fluid and don't die, it's more proof that Jesus still works miracles today. They ought to be dead. They're drinking Havilland. The fact that they're walking around, what further proof do you need of Jesus Christ? I would unfriend him if he was on my Facebook list. All of his congregants, everybody's unfriended. I'm terrified that some of this will rub off on me or anybody I know. Havilland, engine cleaning fluid. Here's a rapid-fire list of some other miracles that have made headlines over the decades. It was back in December of 2006, Fountain Valley, California. This was reported in the LA Times and elsewhere. A guy worked at a candy factory called Bodega Chocolates, and he saw something curious under the spout of a mixing vat. He saw a 2.5-inch likeness of the Virgin Mary posed in prayer, formed out of chocolate. This guy's a 26-year-old devout Roman Catholic. He said, quote, it's absolutely a miracle. Ah, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. BeliefNet reported this miracle from a few decades ago. This has been making the rounds since 1977. It was on the 5th of October in 77 in the small town of Lake Arthur, New Mexico. A woman named Maria Rubio, she was at home making fresh tortillas, cooking those tortillas on the skillet, when praise be to the Almighty, she looked down and she saw the tortillas. And right there on one of the tortillas, she witnessed with her very own eyes the face of Jesus Christ. And yes, there are Google photos of this. Now, the Rubio family built a shrine. They built a shrine to the Jesus tortilla in the backyard of their home. And I kid you not, tens of thousands of people made the pilgrimage to go see Tortilla Jesus. Many of them brought photos of their sick family members, their sick loved ones, because they were hoping Tortilla Christ would give them a miracle, a healing miracle. This went on for decades. Apparently, it lasted for decades. It's a perishable food. How did they get the tortilla to last? It was like 30 years until finally somebody dropped it and it broke into pieces. They still keep the pieces in the Rubio home today. Praise Jesus. In 2004, Steve Cragg at Memorial Drive United Methodist Church in Houston, Texas, he was enjoying a bag of Cheetos. He pulled out a Cheeto that looked suspiciously like a praying Jesus Christ. Those photos are online as well. Now, this guy didn't call it a miracle. He just thought it was interesting. So, to his credit, I don't think he bought into the bat shittery. But I think he looked down and thought, hey, wait, that looks like Jesus. Maybe just thought it was funny. I don't know. He still believes in Jesus. March of 2003, there was a woman in India. She sliced into an eggplant and she found seeds in the eggplant that spelled out Allah in Urdu script. The eggplant transformed into a shrine inside her house, and it is considered by many people a sacred place. The most famous account, arguably, of a divine impression on perishable foods has to be the Virgin Mary grilled cheese sandwich. We've told this story quite a few times. This stems back to 1994. A woman named Diane Dizer, Hollywood, California, makes a grilled cheese. Right before she takes the first bite, she looks down, and in the bread is a divinely cheesy image of the Virgin Mary looking back at her. And did she think it was a miracle? She kept it in her freezer for 9 years until finally putting it on eBay in 2003. A casino bought the Virgin Mary grilled cheese, and they bought it for the cool purchase price of $28,000. 2003, a guy named Fred Juan is at home making fish sticks. Now, apparently he had heard the story about the Virgin Mary toast, and he was at home cooking fish sticks, and he saw seared onto the bottom of one of his fish sticks what he claims is the image of Jesus Christ. You can see the image of that fish stick as the thumbnail of this podcast, or you can simply Google search Jesus fish stick, and honestly, it's either Jesus or Kenny Loggins. But it is pretty remarkable. I don't know if this counts as a miracle, but this is a story that's been floating around the internet. It was reported that a man put a ghost in a jar and then sold the jar on eBay. The guy claimed that he had caught a spirit or entity. He called it the black thing, although I believe it was transparent. He kept it in the jar, put it on eBay, and he warned potential buyers that if they were to open the jar, he would not be held responsible and that all sales are final. According to the reports, a 7-day auction on eBay topped out at over $50,000 for the ghost in a jar. But apparently the winning bidder didn't actually pay the money. Bongo Java Cafe, Belmont, Tennessee. They were making cinnamon buns one day, and as they finished a batch, pulled them out of the oven, let those cinnamon buns cool, somebody looked down and saw in the cinnamon buns a specific bun that looked exactly like Mother Teresa. And it really does. They kept it on display at Bongo Java Cafe for a decade. They put it on. I would, too. I would totally put that under glass. I'd put a camera on it. I'd have Mother Teresa nun bun cam. I would do that. It's awesome. Somebody stole the thing. Finally, after 10 years, they offered a reward. I don't know if the nun bun was actually recovered. Google image search nun bun. It looks exactly like Mother Teresa. It really does. Kurt Hamilton Foster lives in Australia, hosting a Christmas party one year. A lot of his friends were smokers, so he had ashtrays littered all around the house. After the party, he looked down in one of the charred, scarred ashtrays and burned into it by cigarettes was an image of Jesus Christ. It's a miracle. 2002, the Jassani family of Mumbai. They returned from the store. They went to market, came back with a potato that was shaped like the elephant-headed Hindu god Ganesha. It's a potato shaped like a Hindu god. And 70 people a day pilgrims making the journey to the Jessani home every day so they themselves can witness the sacred spud. Of course, you're way ahead of me here. This is a phenomenon called pareidolia. This is where we perceive patterns where there aren't necessarily patterns. We're pattern seekers. We've evolved to see patterns in things. That's why we see the undulations and the shadows on things like the surface of the moon, and we see human faces. Oh, it looks like a human face. We see patterns everywhere we go, and quite often we assign agency to those patterns. It must be some force, some intelligence behind those patterns. It's something we have evolved to do for a variety of reasons. It's very interesting science. What about the miracles where God supernaturally selects someone for survival and apparently just says, screw everybody else? These make me crazy. 2015, ABC News reports the story of a 7-year-old girl, lone survivor of a single-engine plane crash. Her whole family's in the plane. Everybody else dies. This happens in southwestern Kentucky. Her mom's dead, her dad's dead, her sister and cousin dead. She survives the crash. She crawls out of the wreckage, and she wanders in the woods until she finally is discovered and rescued. And she is called an incredible miracle, quote, incredible miracle. Back in the wreckage, her father, her mother, her sister, and cousin are dead. She lost her entire family, and yet the girl is called a miracle. I'm so glad she survived. Don't get me wrong. I'm so glad she survived. I hope she's able to recover from this horrible ordeal, and I hope she's able to build a good life, a happy life here on planet Earth. I'm delighted she's saved. Is this the standard for miracles? What's the ratio for survival? One person survives, four other people killed. June 2009, I referenced this in one of the first speeches I ever gave as an atheist. It was the Yemeni Airways flight that crashed into the Indian Ocean, 153 people on board. One 12-year-old girl survives the crash. That means 152 people died horribly. But the global media lapped this story up and they called her the miracle girl. Now, I'm so glad she survived. But what is the standard for miracles? Would the families of the other 152 people, their spouses, their mothers, their fathers, their children, their grandparents, their associates, their friends, would they call it a miracle? I kind of doubt it. What is the standard for supernatural intervention in the 21st century, in any century? All right, I've been ranting for 40 minutes. We'll be back in just a second to hear what our listeners have to say about their own experiences with the claims of miraculous activity, a divine hand manipulating the physical world, obvious proof of God. Our callers after this. Of all the precious commodities in this world, one of the big ones is time. But Stamps.com is saving us time and money. You know, we used to rush to the post office to get there before they closed. Stamps.com never closes. We used to buy stamps by the roll. Stamps.com lets us print them ourselves. We used to guess at postage amounts. Stamps.com gives us a scale that gauges postage right from our computer. And we used to have to leave the house to mail a package. With Stamps.com, we can prep everything right at our own desk and have the mailed person just pick it up. All of the services of the U.S. Postal Service are right at your fingertips. Any letter, any package, any class of mail, anytime. I've used them for everything from mailing gifts to friends to shipping books out to tour stops to anything requiring an envelope and postage. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the home page and type in Seth Andrews. That's stamps.com. Enter Seth Andrews. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Don't forget that those who support me on Patreon get a totally commercial-free version of the broadcast. And some people prefer to listen and support the sponsors. And other people want to do like a buck or two a month and become a Patreon supporter. Either way, thanks for the support. If you want to become a Patreon supporter, it's patreon.com/Seth Andrews. Commercial free shows and a bonus broadcast every single month. And those are always fun to do. We're talking today about Jesus on a fish stick. The types of manifestations of God's miraculous power that people so often claim are proof that God exists. And with that, we go to the switchboard. I've got area code 308. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. What's your name?
Amanda.
Amanda, we're talking about miracles, the supernatural, God's hand among us, things that are obviously proof of the divine. You have a story for us?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of funny to me. It's more funny than actually thinking that it was an actual miracle. But I was enjoying a day off, decided to do some yoga. So I pull out the yoga mat, sitting in my room, doing one of those poses where you're looking down kind of at your ankles, and you see this tiny little gold shimmery piece, and I'm like, oh, great, it's a nail. For several months when we first moved in, I was finding nails around the edges of the carpet in the living room. So I thought, great, almost stepped on one. So I peel back the little bit of yoga mat that it's kind of under, and it's wedged deep in the carpet. So I pull up this little gold piece, and staring at me is Jesus. It's a little gold piece, Jesus. It's maybe about an inch big, and it's missing its cross. So he's just got his arms out majestically there like he kind of wants to give me a hug, and it's just a little gold Jesus. So I begin to laugh hysterically because I've actually been secular or atheist since I was about 6 years old, never really believing in a God. Everybody who knows me, people that are important to me, just know it comes with the package. They know that I'm an atheist. So I'm kind of laughing at myself that, great, this atheist in this house has just found Jesus. So I immediately go to my phone, I text message my coworker, Lindsay, and she actually grew up going to Lutheran school. We get along. She gets my humor. So I send out her a message that says, I found Jesus. Literally found Jesus in my carpet, bending down, doing a yoga pose at my feet, staring up at me, his little tiny gold Jesus. So I send her a picture of the Jesus, and she messages back with, I feel like I need to see this carpet. So it's kind of been a joke between us. The memory actually popped up on my Facebook memories just last month. So maybe about 4 years ago, last month is when this happened to me. And I recall telling the story to someone else. I wish I remembered who I told it to, because they had replied back with, oh, well, there's your proof. You found Jesus. You should come to Jesus. I'm like, nah, not really proof that I should come to Jesus. More like maybe a Catholic family lived in the home before I did.
Now, hang on. They were serious that this was a sign from God?
Yes, because if I can try to remember who it was, I think it was a family member. And on my dad's side, they are kind of Catholic. But in my home, we never really grew up with anyone talking about it. So it was kind of this idea of, oh, everybody believes in this thing. I'm not sure what this thing is. So, yeah, no, they were totally like, well, you found Jesus. Like, why else would that happen to you? Why have you have lived in this home for however long it was at the time, a couple months? I vacuumed my room numerous times and never picked up the Jesus out of the carpet until that particular day. And I was staring down into the carpet.
Did you keep the Jesus?
I did, but I was looking for it the other day, and I can't find it now. So I don't know if I decided to clean again and came across it and was like, what the hell is this for, and threw it away.
I've got Jesus's. I mean, I've got dashboard Jesus. I've got Jesus. It's Jesus on a spring, and he's got adhesive on the bottom, and he's designed to stick on your dashboard. I've got him in my office, you know, because I grew up with a song, right? Well, I don't care if it rains or freezes as long as I got that plastic Jesus. Sitting on the dashboard of my car. You never heard that song. So
no.
We used to have that song. And then I've got action figure Jesus. Somebody sent me a Jesus on the cross, but it's totally sacrilegious. Everybody sends me Jesus stuff because it's just funny. Punchlines become funnier when they happen to Jesus. And so I have my own share of Jesus icons all around.
Well, the funniest thing to me was that it also did not have a cross to it. So I think I'd be happier Jesus without the cross on my back.
So you think, you know, he supernaturally sort of peeled himself off of the cross icon, like he rose again kind of thing? Or
Well, I wouldn't say that, but it was just pretty funny that he was just him without the cross.
All right. Well, you keep an eye around the house. Let me know if any supernatural activity manifests itself. And thanks for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Area code 561. You are on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. What's your name?
Hi, Seth. My name is Lauren.
Well, we're talking about miracles, manifestations of divine power and activity. Do you have a story for us?
I do. I have a couple of things. I have a grandmother who totally believes in the power of prayer. She is very adamant about it. I've been sick for a few years. My uncle recently was diagnosed with kidney cancer, and she prays for us all the time. And my uncle just went through chemo and dialysis, and he is starting to get better. His kidneys are functioning again. And my grandma attributes that to her praying and calls it a miracle.
You never hear her talk about the physicians and the medical professionals in any way, ever?
Not really, no. No, she doesn't really think about that much. She thinks that the physicians are given the gift through God.
What I normally hear is something along the lines of, well, God gave them a brain. Now, who gave you the brain with which you learned medicine in, you know? And so that's how they sort of get back to giving God the glory. And it's on its surface hard to knock this sweet little old lady who's offering up her prayers for people in need, right? I mean, she's probably exactly. Got a great big heart, right? She's probably just a beautiful person with a big heart. And this is how she has been taught to support people.
Exactly.
Does it drive you a little crazy whenever you see the physicians ignored?
It does. Yeah, she's a little wacky. Her best friend, since they were 7 years old, is even worse. She has a spirit guide.
Oh, you got to tell us about a spirit guide. What's that? What's that supposed to do?
Just guide her through the journey of life and heal her when she's sick. She believes in, like, alternative medicine. She told my uncle that he should try turmeric capsules, and that should make him better instead of getting chemo and dialysis. She's like, oh, no, that's just going to make you worse. Just try the turmeric.
So if the spirit guide is there, the spirit guide is not a conduit for healing energy. The spirit guide advises you as to what medical choices to make in your life. Is that the gist?
Pretty much. Yeah. She's also got a guy that she's dating. She's in her 80s, mind you, but she's dating. And her boyfriend, he's got MS. And she tries to get him to do, like, yoga and all kinds of, like, spiritual meditation. Also, she's big on the turmeric. She tries to push the turmeric on everybody. I don't know what she thinks that does, but she thinks that'll cure everything. And she calls that a miracle. A miraculous medicinal substance. And then I'll have a cousin who also is big on healing stones, and he thinks that's like the biggest miracle ever discovered.
All right, Lauren, what's a healing stone? What's it supposed to do?
it's a gem made of quartz or something like that, and each type of gem has its own power, apparently. And he's given me some. He's given some to my uncle. I have endometriosis and uterine fibroids, and I'm having them removed soon. But I think my cousin thinks that all I need are the stones.
He gave you the magic rocks to help fix the problem, huh?
Yes, exactly.
And his heart's probably in a good place. He's trying to help. And that's why so many people are going to hear us talking right now, Lauren, and they're going to think that you two are just total assholes because these people are trying to be kind. They're trying to be generous, and this is just how they've been taught. But, I mean, you and I look at it and think these are distractions from real-world physical solutions to our problems, right?
Totally, yeah. I would rather see a doctor. That's just me.
Where did the stones come from? I can't help but think that somebody's taking a Visa or a MasterCard somewhere. You know, someone's making a profit on these things, right?
Oh, yeah. No, he goes to these new agey stores and stocks up on the stones.
You and I are in the wrong business. Why are we not out finding beautiful stones somewhere, and we'll make up a story and we'll put them in a fancy package and we'll say they're $50 and that they have magical powers? You and I could clean up, right? If you and I were unscrupulous people, we could totally clean up.
Totally. I should just quit school and work and just do that. No.
What are you going to school for, Lauren?
Oh, I'm going to school for educational leadership to become a school principal or like a college dean or something like that.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations and all my best in your education and my highest hopes for good health. I hope you get the issues that you've got solved, you know, thanks to medicine for being there for you. It sounds like you've got a plan anyway, right?
Yes, yes. I'm having minor surgery in a couple of weeks and getting that solved.
Do me a favor, Lauren. Drop me an email when the surgery is over and all the dust is settled and things aren't chaotic, and just give me the update and, you know, let everybody know you're okay. I'll pass the word on via social media to everybody. I'll say, Lauren, who was on the radio, she's doing fine. Just give me the heads up, would you?
Oh, sure. Thank you so much.
All right. We got to check on each other. We're going to have each other's back out there. So all my best for that. Thanks for being a part of the show, Lauren. You're terrific. Take care.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much.
Lauren mentioned turmeric a few times during our conversation, and as she was talking, I took the liberty of pulling up an article at sciencebasedmedicine.org written by Dr. Harriet Hall, who is a retired physician and a longtime debunker. And she had written an article on the subject. I'll just read part of it, and we'll find out what this turmeric thing is all about. Dr. Hall said, a correspondent asked me to look into the science behind the health claims for turmeric. He'd encountered medical professionals trying to pass turmeric as some sort of magical herb to cure us from the post-industrial chemical apocalypse. Turmeric is a plant in the ginger family. It's native to Southeast India. It's known as curcumin. I hope I'm saying that right. The rhizomes are ground into orange-yellow powder that's used as a spice in Indian cuisine. It has traditionally been used in folk medicine for various indications, and it's now become popular in alternative medicine circles, where it claimed to be effective in treating a broad spectrum of diseases, including cancer, Alzheimer's, arthritis, and diabetes. One website claims that science has proven it to be as effective as 14 drugs. I wish those claims were true, Dr. Hall says, because turmeric is far less expensive and probably much safer than prescription drugs. It clearly has some interesting properties, but the claims go far beyond the actual evidence. The Natural Medicine's comprehensive database has reviewed all the available scientific studies and has concluded it is likely safe, possibly effective for dyspepsia or indigestion and osteoarthritis, and insufficient reliable evidence to rate effectiveness for other indications such as Alzheimer's, colorectal cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, and skin cancer. And a chemical in turmeric might have anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, and antioxidant properties, but this has not yet been confirmed in people. And it looks like many of the positive claims, these declarative claims about turmeric, are overreaching. At least for the moment, they're not based in science or any concrete scientific findings. I've got Dan on Skype. Dan, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Give me a miracle. Give me some proof of God, would you?
Oh, I wish I could.
I've been waiting for years for proof. Yeah. Of God.
Me too, but you know, well, what the heck? We have to go with what we have, I guess.
Well, what are the claims you've been seeing out there?
Well, there's this one that was rather interesting to me. I get invited every so often up for a meal at this one local church, and it's nice of them to do that, and that's good company, and my relatives from this area go there, so, you know, what the heck, spend a little bit of time there. This one time, they were having a gentleman named Dave Sanderson who was going to speak. He is one of the passengers on what they call the Miracle on the Hudson, which is the time when that U.S. Air Flight 1549 had a dual engine failure, and it went down into the Hudson River in New York. So this talk, I had some interest in it because I'm a private pilot myself, have been since 1968. So it shows my age, I guess, a little bit. But this gentleman got up there and started talking about how he was on this flight and blah, blah, blah. And that was fine. And it took about 2 minutes before he started talking about God. So, you know, up go the defenses a little bit, but, you know, give the guy a chance. He started on how he was in this plane and the plane went down and he was being directed to go out and he was the last passenger to get off the plane and he was helping other people get off, including onto the wing and then onto the ferries, which were around there. And in this time, he had this nice little talk and he felt that God put him there for a reason. And that really got my irk up a little bit. And then after this talk, he started mentioning how other people had called him, and he's calling himself a miracle man or a gift from God. And that just torqued my shorts because...
He got your irk up and it torqued your shorts. I mean, this yes. This is egregious, is what this yeah. person has done to you.
And then some, yes. And, you know, I usually don't get upset about anything, but this particular guy really did. He forgot to tell that it was the captain and the first officer who were the real heroes of this story, not him pushing people out.
There was no mention at all of Sullenberger and the co-pilot? None?
At the end, when he was talking about how he had met up with them again and da-da-da-da-da-da, but anything about their skills? No. Anything about their talents and their training? Not at all. And so that's what really irked me, because these guys have gone through thousands of hours of unpaid training to be prepared for things along this line. And not to mention, I think Mr. Sullenberger had... more than 19,000 hours flying time. And the first officer had quite a few thousand as well. I mean, here I am with only 2,700 hours, big deal. But, you know, I've got a respect for these guys because they go through this professionally and it's their love of life. But this guy's coming up as a passenger saying that he was a miracle man and he had helped people, with him being in the water for part of the time, helping people get onto the ferry, and he suffered from a little bit of hypothermia and so on and so forth. But it was just a little bit too much for me.
I mean, I can see admiring someone who stuck around and was thinking of others and whatnot, but this does seem a bit opportunistic. It's a bit of an ego enhancer. I, the miracle man, the last mm-hmm. one off the flight, gave so selflessly, and now I'm going to tour and tell my story and write a book. I don't know what he's going to do, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm not sure 100%, but I am pretty sure he's making some fairly good money as a motivational speaker nowadays. He's talked with various companies and this kind of thing. So,
Dan, I get it, though. I mean, if someone has gone through a truly traumatic experience and they want to write about it, they want to use the opportunity of their life to write about it, I get that. But there's sort of a temperature to some of it that does seem extremely self-serving. And, you know, when you call yourself the miracle man and you designate that you sat in seat 37A or, you know, I don't even know how many seats rows are on the plane, but I was there for a reason, designated to be kind of the hero. It just reeks of opportunism a little bit.
Precisely. You know, someone had to be the last one off the plane. So, you know, of course, it ended up being him, but it could have been anyone else. It could have been a mother or a housewife or a businessman for other reasons. But, you know, he just decided to take that upon his own.
Let's say half the passengers died. Those who survived would have been a miracle. If all but one had drowned or died in the crash, the one survivor would have been called a miracle. I mean, no matter how you slice it, you can mold this into God's divine hand, right?
Oh, yeah. At the end of the talk also, when he was talking with some other people, someone came up and said, because he survived, that's an evidence of God, too. And I just go, no, no, no. So I would have left at that moment, but I was there waiting with my relatives to go chat about some other stuff.
In all of your decades of flying, have you ever had a close call? Ever had a moment? You know, the engine stalls, you lose control, there's wind shear, something?
Nothing like that. But when I was in training, I was doing a solo cross country from up near Buffalo, New York, over to Cleveland. And I had everything figured out, except I was flying at the wrong altitude. And another plane came zipping by. And I didn't see it until it was about 30 yards from me. And that was a bit of a panic. But outside of that, no. Like they say about flying, it's 99% boredom and 1% terror.
I had a buddy who's an ultralight pilot. And I think they've increased their regulations on ultralight since he took me up. But essentially, it was just it's like a triangle frame with what looked like two tractor wheels on it and a V8 engine with a propeller on it on the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like two bass boat seats bolted to the frame. Okay. Yep. He's like, hey, let's go up. So I'm sitting on this thing and he screams, clear prop. And he goes behind me and literally has to grab the prop and flip it like they do in the movies to start the thing up.
Yes. Right?
And we end up 800 feet in the air. My feet are dangling off the sides. I mean, there's no structure. It's just a frame with two seats and some wheels and a propeller. And there's this big triangle wing over the top of this. And it's held on by one big ass bolt.
Yes.
And he had told me before we took off, he told me, he said, people call this the Jesus bolt. And I said, why do you call it the Jesus bolt? And he says, because if that bolt ever fails, we're going to go see Jesus.
That would do it.
So yeah, the whole time my feet are dangling off the side at 800 feet, and I was thinking about the Jesus bolt, just one of those things. That's awesome, Dan. Well, thanks for sharing your story and for listening. I sure appreciate it.
My pleasure. Talk to you later.
Here's an interesting story as reported on the ABC affiliate WDAM. Catherine Miller wrote the story in January of this year. It said, in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, a Bible was found untouched at, how do you say it? Is it Bass Chapel, B-A-S-S, or Bass Chapel at William Carey University after an EF3 tornado ripped through the campus? It's garnered a lot of attention on social media. The tornado ravaged parts of Hattiesburg and left many to pick up the pieces and start anew. And the surprise wasn't just that the Bible was left unscathed. It left a message to those who discovered it and gave many hope during a time of tragedy. The Bible was undisturbed on the pulpit and opened to Psalm 46. The first part of Psalm 46 reads, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Of course, the photograph of the destroyed church with the open Bible has gone viral. Nothing in the article about the benevolence of a God that would allow an EF3 to destroy God's own house, reducing it to splinters, leaving humans with an incredible amount of cleanup and expense, but rescuing a few pieces of paper. Nothing in the article about that. I mentioned in a speech I'd done a few years ago about a guy named Danny Moody after the EF5 tornado hit Moore, Oklahoma. Just torched Moore, Oklahoma. 40-plus people dead, many of them school children who were trapped and drowned in the basement of an elementary school. The tornado hit as school was letting out. It was just a horrible, unthinkable tragedy. This guy found a few Bible pages stuck to the windshield of his pickup truck, and he put it on Twitter, and he said, this is proof that my God still delivers. This is the standard for miracles in the 21st century. Hemet Mehta over at The Friendly Atheist posted this story in early January of this year. A guy named Matthew Roberts, a police officer in Decatur, Texas, he's sitting on the side of the road in his police Tahoe. And for some reason, there's a big semi-truck, a big tractor trailer that is driving on the side of the road. I guess didn't see him and just smashed into the back of the Tahoe and destroyed it. And there are photographs. I mean, the whole vehicle from the back door on is just crushed and burned, and it just looks horrible. Well, Officer Roberts rushed off to the hospital, and he survived. And we're very thankful for that, very thankful that he's going to be okay. But if you look at the photographs, and this is why people latched onto the story, if you look at the hugely burned wreckage, which is the last half of the car, you can see something sticking out near the bumper area. It's a portion of the bumper which somehow remained unscathed, and there is text. There's readable text on it, and it says, in God we trust. Not only did the Lord manifest a miraculous salvation for Officer Roberts, but he gave us a message by allowing these words to remain unscathed, unburned, uncrushed after the accident. It's obvious proof of God's divine power. Of course, Hemet had mentioned in the article, and he's right, that if the officer had died and they would have seen in God we trust, they would have presented that happy ending. Well, the officer's now in a place where there's no car accidents and there's no flames and pain and suffering. There's only joy and peace and bliss. And one day we'll all be reunited together someday. if he'd been horribly paralyzed. They would have said, you know, he should have been dead, but he remained with us because God apparently still has more work for Officer Roberts to do. I mean, no matter what happens, there's a scenario which somehow makes this God's divine plan. And you hear this stuff, and it just makes you crazy. Ugh. I've got area code 828. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Lindsay.
Hi, Lindsay. We're talking about miracles today. What do you have for us?
All right. I have an aunt who believes everything from the flat earth theory to human photosynthesis, but she isn't just the typical gullible type. She actively searches for this kind of material.
So she browses the website, like flat earth websites, to confirm her belief, huh?
Mm-hmm. And there's always someone that can confirm it, right? So after her mom passed away, my aunt began finding pennies all over the place. She found them in her house, in our couches, in the car. She even said she found them in parking lots. That she claimed they were a miracle message from her mother.
What significance would the pennies have? Did your mom leave her pennies? Did they have a thing with pennies? I mean, was it just she just selected that icon after the death of her mother or what?
I think that's exactly what happened. She never said what the message was supposed to mean or if they had any past experience with pennies. She just said after her mom died, she started to find them.
So she's walking along and she looks down and she sees something glinting in the sunlight and it happens to be an old penny. It's not just an old penny, is it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of my other favorite ones from her is, it's not exactly a miracle, but she believes in human photosynthesis. So she read an article once that said you don't really need to eat food. If you just go outside and drink water and sit in the sunlight for long enough, you don't need to eat food. Literally human photosynthesis. It's really great if you look it up.
How is she still alive, right?
I know. I know.
I read a story. It was years ago about a woman who believed that she could exist solely on sunlight.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm getting the story. It's been so many years. I'll have to go look it up. Forgive me if I got the details wrong. But apparently, I mean, it almost killed her. She stopped eating food and her nourishment was the warmth of the sun, which was apparently kind of the same thing. And it almost killed her. So
yeah.
She's still kicking, right? She's in good health. She's eating food, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, she eats food.
If human photosynthesis was to ever be proven, I might call that a miracle. We might actually say that fits in the miracle category. Well, you're awesome. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. It's kind of a lighthearted show today. Everybody's venting and ranting a little bit about the frustrations they feel because we look at these things and we think it's so obviously ridiculous and sometimes dangerous. You know, I'm a little worried about you. I mean, you ever feel that way?
Oh, all the time. With the medicine, especially.
You fear for the species and you think facts matter. And yet so many instances showed that no one is listening. Very few people are listening, and it's maddening at times. But I got your back, okay? There are people in the audience who we feel your pain. We feel your frustration. So thanks for sharing the story. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
She had brought up the flat earth thing. I was in a conversation a few weeks ago, and doing what I do, I end up in these conversations from time to time. Often with Bible believers, Bible literalists who are desperate to convince me that the Bible is true. Scientifically true is quite often how they frame it. Obviously scientifically true. And so I'll pick out some specific things in the Bible which are obviously ridiculous or debunked or disproven. And I'll just toss it out there to see what the reaction might be. And I brought up the biblical claim that there is a firmament. And it's talked about in the first chapter of Genesis. God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and it divides the waters, separating the water under it from the water above, like the water under the sky, which is terrestrial and subterranean water, and a water canopy above the sky, which encloses and protects the earth. Space water, okay? So I bring up the firmament, and I say, do you believe there's a firmament which separates the earth water from space water, which envelops and encompasses the earth? Because there's no evidence whatsoever to support that and a ton of evidence against it. And they respond to me with absolute and emphatic conviction. Well, how do you know there's not a firmament up there? Like for them, an invisible firmament created by God wouldn't bow to the clumsy tools of scientific measurement. So there might be a firmament around the Earth and space water on the other side of it. And they're totally fine with believing this. They think it's perfectly reasonable. I mean, who knew? We look up in the sky and we see the sun and the moon and the stars, but we're actually gazing through an invisible firmament and a canopy of space water. I can see why some people just give up. I'm not giving up. Right? I mean, I still want to be out there attempting to replace bad ideas with better ideas, trying to change minds, even my own mind when I find that I'm wrong about something. You know, I want to be out there being part of the conversation, but I can see why people just throw up their hands and say, it's useless. I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my energy. They're not listening. They believe in a firmament that separates us from space water. All the Lord works in mysterious ways. Area code 225, you are on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. What's your name?
My name's Margo.
Hi, Margo. We're talking about miracles, God's divine hand, proof of the supernatural. What do you think?
I once had to go to a retreat for the school that I worked for, and it was a religious retreat. And I didn't really want to go, but I went, of course, because we were obliged to. And there was this one woman there who told us, in fact, she was a retreat organizer, and she told a very long story. I won't tell you the whole story, but the gist of it was that she felt called to enter into a religious order, and in order to make the decision, she would pray to God every day to send her a sign. And she'd pray and pray and waited and waited, and she'd pray and wait, waited and prayed. Anyway, guess what? Nothing happened. No sign came. Silly me, what was I thinking that God would pay me any special attention? And anyway, I'm known to be really intellectual, and I'm far too intellectual to be looking for signs. So I learned my lesson, and I decided to change strategy because of God's silence. So I'm listening to this, and I think, oh, well, that's great. She decided to change strategy, and she's intellectual, so maybe she's going to figure this out on her own. So her change in strategy was to now direct her prayers to the Blessed Mother. And so this time her prayer was, Dear Blessed Mother, please let me know if I should join the order or not by not sending me a sign.
The lack of a response for her was an answer in the affirmative, huh?
Yeah.
You get the vibe she was just looking for an excuse to join, like she'd already made up her mind but was looking for validation?
Exactly. And I just thought to myself, well, just, you know, sounds like you want to join. Just go ahead and join. Don't wait for someone to give you a sign or not give you a sign. Just go ahead and do it.
What would have qualified as a sign? Miracle. I mean, do you know what she was looking for? I mean, was it something overt, a voice, a cloud, pillar of fire? I mean, what?
To be fair, I abbreviated her not sending me a sign. What she really said to the Blessed Mother was something like, Blessed Mother, open my heart to the Holy Spirit so that I can discern for myself. If you don't send me a sign, then I'll know that I'm supposed to listen to the Holy Spirit. Now, I don't know what the Holy Spirit sounds like either, but apparently she has some kind of connection there.
I used to work in radio, Christian radio, with a guy who would talk about when he got a check in his spirit, which is essentially our own process of trying to discern right from wrong, what's wise or unwise, what's good, what's not good. And what he heard or thought or interpreted it to be was the spirit was giving you a little whisper in the ear. Hey, you know, be careful of this person. Don't trust them, or don't take this job, or don't return this phone call or whatnot. So he had sort of attached the Holy Spirit to his own inner workings, his own sort of intuition, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. I mean, some people say listen to your gut. Some people say listen to your higher self. Some people say listen to the Holy Spirit, you know, or just different terms for figuring out the problem on your own and listening to your better judgment. So I guess that was her thing, but she was looking for a sign, and that's a good question. I don't know what the sign was supposed to be.
The sign was that there was no sign. The sign was that nothing happened. So there's no. It's miraculous. It's obvious proof of God's divine power. So
exactly. And the funny part was, like, I looked around and I said, wait, did anybody else catch that? But she asked for not a sign, and everyone was so solemn, and they were looking down and they were nodding. that's just groupthink. And I think that organized religion has been really good at groupthink, harnessing that and using it.
Well, Margot, I appreciate the call. I'm going to go get in touch with my higher self. I don't know what that is,
but
I could sure use him.
Well, okay. Well, you have a great day, and thanks a lot. I saw you at the 300th podcast. We went to Dallas and saw you there. We had a great time.
What an amazing day that was. I'm so glad you were
so
part
fun.
Of it.
Yes,
it
I
was
did. I enjoyed it.
One of those things I will just take with me for the rest of my life. You know, it's wonderful to be in the company of people who... I mean, it's not like, you know, the herd of sheep, all these people, they're not all alike about everything. They don't all agree on everything.
Yeah, they get you and they appreciate you. And I really appreciated you that day. And I remember when I was leaving, I said, congratulations. I couldn't think of anything to say, but I really meant to say how much I appreciate everything you do for the show. And you're our lifeline out of these groupthink bubbles. So I really appreciate the show.
Thanks for the encouragement. That means a lot to me. Have a wonderful week. And thanks again for the call. I appreciate it.
You too. Okay. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
And that'll do it for this show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for being a part of this broadcast. I'm back next Tuesday. We're going dark, my friends. We're going to get satanic. Going to talk to Lucian Greaves, the co-founder of the Satanic Temple. I'll see you back here on the radio for that. And until then, have a wonderful week. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.